Notoriety Sports Network. Breaking news, live shows, unprecedented content. Notoriety Sports Network, built different.
Welcome back to the NSN Philly Show. Thank you for tuning in tonight, and make sure to check us out on all platforms like Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram. You can find us anywhere, but I hope everyone is doing great tonight. I'm here again with my partners, Eric and Reggie. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing awesome, man. How are you doing today, Reggie?
I'm good, guys. Let's talk some sports.
Oh, yeah. Bunch of news this week, a bunch of controversy. We'll start out with the Birds and the recent news that had come out about Doug Peterson in the Eagles front office. Two unsourced quotes came out this week about Doug Peterson's years in Philadelphia after the Super Bowl run. The first quote stated that Peterson was ridiculed and criticized for every decision. One source told the website, if you won by three, it wasn't enough. If you lost on a last second field goal, you were the worst coach in history. And the second quote that came out, short and sweet, they said that Doug Peterson was treated like a baby. Was this news already understood, or do you find it shocking? I think it definitely goes both ways.
I don't find it shocking. You know, we're talking about a National Football League team, professional organization. There's going to be critiquing. There's going to be criticism for decisions. And we know Doug Peterson wasn't afraid to make bold decisions, right? So if some of those decisions were questioned after the fact, I don't find it shocking. So to me, this really doesn't mean much. We know how the Eagles organization has been run for many years, not just with Doug Peterson, but prior to that as well. And a lot of the things that were said in that article, to me personally, didn't really shock me. It was all things that I kind of already, I understood. This is how the Eagles run things. I don't know why to some people it was a shock, but for me, no.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree, Eric. It's not news to me at all. I mean, when they straight up said that he had no control over who plays on Sunday, basically, that's all Howie's decision. That's when I knew Doug had absolutely no control besides his trash play call. And that's about it. Unfortunately, that sucks for him. Like, he gets ridiculed for literally everything he did. I mean, yeah, he's the head coach, but, like, yeah, you win by three. It's not enough. Like, yo, come on, win's a win at this point, man. Like, you got to get them when you got them, but – even if you lose on the last second field goal, like, okay, if it's a 62-yarder, you can't help that. The dude's got a leg. Like, all right, well, that's not your fault. You did the best you could. Like, that's not on him. So that news ain't shocking to me at all. I figured it was like that once I heard that he had no control over the 53-man roster on Sunday. So that's what I think about it.
I think it was shocking because it really confirms everything we thought about the front office over the past few years after the Super Bowl. It really shows that Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie and the entire front office had ego problems after they won the Super Bowl. Everybody thought that they knew everything, even Doug Peterson. They all had that mindset. And it's just frustrating to know that really these reports bring out the truth. But I also think that if Doug really had no control over the roster or over really anything that was happening, he shouldn't have been fired. And I'm afraid that this news may foreshadow Nick Sirianni's future in Philadelphia. It could really show that Nick's going to have no control over really anything, and that will affect any head coach.
You know when this was really exposed to me was when a few years back in the end of the season press conference, when Doug Peterson said Mike Rowe was coming back as his, the offensive pass game coordinator, offensive coordinator. Next day, he gets fired. At that point, I said, okay, we know who's running things here because Doug was straight up about that. And then the next day, the man was fired and relieved from his duties. So that right there told me all I needed to know about how things were being run in the Eagles organization.
Yeah, that's honestly really – you can just tell Doug had really no control over who he got or anything. I mean, you even saw it when we were looking for a head coach. Like, yeah, we looked around really, but we had somebody who we could have put there with Deuce or whatever, and that kind of just kind of brushed under the rug again. And honestly, it's whoever they want. It's not like It's honestly who Jeffrey Lurie wants up there, to be honest with you. And he just tells Howie and Howie goes with it. Like, it's pretty much how that kind of runs up there, which is sad. And it's kind of looking like we're becoming Jerry Jones style stuff. And I don't really like that. You know, I'd rather the head coach take care of what the head coach has to do personnel wise. I like how the Phillies are doing it where they got, yeah, they have a GM, but they also have a director of player personnel. You know, same thing. That's how Maury is too. You know, Elton Brand's the GM, but you have a person who takes care of the personnel stuff. I'd rather that with the Eagles any day of the week than whatever the hell we got going on up there, because Howie sucks and he should have been fired for all his stupidity minus his free agency beauties that he kind of pulls out somehow. But nah, I'm not happy with that at all.
Yeah.
How do you fire somebody though? How do you fire somebody though when you're the person above that person is stepping in and telling him to do things? We don't know whose decision it was to draft, you know, Jalen Reagor in that spot, whose decision it was to, you know, with all of those draft picks and everything that happened, who to keep, who to resign, you know, how do we know Lurie didn't go to Roseman and say, I don't care what you want to do. This guy's coming back next year. I don't care what money he wants, sign him. And that can really hurt a team when you make those kind of emotional decisions. We don't know. Was that really Howie making those decisions? Was it Lurie? That's why, for me, it's hard to know. Obviously, Howie's made some bad decisions, but were they really his decisions or were they Lurie's decisions?
What we definitely know is none of the decisions were made by Doug, and that's what just makes it so infuriating. Chris said we could have had Campbell instead of JJ. We could have had so many other players. We could have had Metcalf instead of JJ. We know the front office has been horrible. Hopefully Howie can turn it around with this draft class, because we have 11 draft picks, but we still have a few weeks to wait for that. But moving on to the free agency, the Eagles signed linebacker Eric Wilson. He was 26 and he was from the Vikings, and he was only signed to a 1-year deal worth about $3.5 million with incentives. But he had a very good year with the Vikings. Their defense was horrible. They were one of the worst defenses in the NFL. But Wilson was impressive. He had 122 total tackles with 3 sacks, 3 interceptions, and 2 fumbles recovered. Does this affect where the Eagles will draft in the first few rounds? Should we go linebacker with the first pick or the second round? What direction should we head in now that we have another talented linebacker to go with Singleton?
Go corner, man. I mean, that guy, yeah, obviously he's a stud. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I like him a lot. Pair him up with Singleton and let those guys both go crazy. Because let's look at it. Let's put the numbers out there. Singleton was, I believe, like 20-something in tackles last year, and he only started, what, like 10 games last year maybe?
He was 16th. He had 2 less than Wilson, and Wilson was 15th.
Exactly. That's absolutely nuts. And Wilson played, I'm pretty sure, the whole season. Singleton didn't.
Yep.
Started. So, I mean, have those two out there running wild, and then you have two pretty much like veteran kind of linebackers out there to coach up. You got people like TJ Edwards out there still with us, you know, and then you have Davion Taylor too to coach up also, who's a very raw talent, but you have two guys who are out there you can coach, bring him along. So I say we got to go corner, or obviously if the top wide receivers are there, we got to take them. Where they are. I mean, as much as I like Micah Parsons, I don't need another rookie linebacker out there, you know.
I think when you do what the Eagles did by trading out of the top 10, you're accepting that whoever falls to you is who you're going to get. So the way I look at it is I want to go with best player available in a position of need. So if Parsons is the best player there, then I say take him. If Surtain is already gone, let's just say Horn is already gone because of Farley's injury. Maybe he falls a bit and, you know, the Eagles don't want to take a chance on him. You got the top 3 corners either gone or, you know, hesitant to pick Farley. And then if Parsons falls, then at that point you got to take him. And if all the receivers are gone and Pitts is gone and all the other guys we've been talking about all this time, and when we had the 6th pick, we were talking about all these guys. If all of them are gone and Parsons is the only one of them left, then yes, take him. But if there's somebody there, if Surtain's there, then I'm taking him. I don't care if Parsons is there. Mm-hmm. And the signing really doesn't change that for me. It is a great signing. It's going to help. I mean, we practically didn't have three linebackers last year because Davion Taylor just simply wasn't ready to play. And I don't even know if he's going to be ready to play this year. I don't know if he's going to really be a safety, if he's going to be a linebacker. I still don't know what the plan is for him. And that's pretty concerning to me, is we drafted that guy in the third round. And this is what, his second, going to be his second year or his third year now? Okay, and we still, second year this year coming up, and we still don't have a plan for what we're going to do with him. That's unacceptable. We just wasted a whole year.
Yeah.
I say you go best player available. If Parsons is there and all those other guys are gone, take Parsons. If one of those other guys is there, like Surtain or Horn, I'll take him over another linebacker, because we need somebody strong on the other side with Darius Slay. We saw what happened last year.
I'd be surprised if Parsons was the only one left on the board. We said this last week, but there's quarterbacks, offensive linemen going to be taken, obviously Kyle Pitts, and at least two of the three receivers. I think you have to go wide receiver or cornerback, even if it's Waddle. I think you need to strengthen the wide receiver core. The Eagles have done nothing in this free agency to bring in even a veteran wide receiver or help at cornerback, really. You need to go with one of the three top wide receivers or cornerback, even if Parsons is still there. He's talented, but I don't know if we need him right now, and there's so many holes on this team. I would say that we should go linebacker in the second or third round, but the first round has to be wide receiver or cornerback, because they're so weak right now on this team, and we don't have a lot of depth at either position. I think you need to find a way to get a wide receiver or corner, whether if it's trading up or even taking Waddle at 12, or if Devontae Smith slides down to 12. But I don't feel there's a reason to go after Parsons.
I mean, yeah, we could. It is what it is. I mean, if he's there, I have no issues taking him. And if, like Eric said, if Davion Taylor slides up to safety, which he honestly could do, he has to work on his coverage skills. I mean, he's fast. He's a really fast guy, and he hits hard. If we're going to use him like that, put him down in the box as like a hybrid type safety deal, if we're going to use him like that, because he can fly all over the place. And honestly, that might be the best spot we could do him for, especially in like run stopping situations where we need that extra big body down there, because he's not a small dude at all. And he likes to just hit the hole and hit people. So, I mean, it is what it is. We'll see what they find to do with him. But, I mean, and not really knowing what to do with him is really concerning, like you said, Eric. I agree with Sean for once that we should go wide receiver or cornerback. But if Micah Parsons is there, take him. Like, there's no excuse not to take him, in my mind.
The only way I'm taking him if all the cornerbacks and wide receivers are off the board. But at the end of the day, he's still talented, and Singleton and Wilson are only on one-year deals. So it's not like they're safe, and it's not like there's no harm in taking another linebacker. I just hope we can address the issues we're having in the cornerback and wide receiver room. But moving on to just recap the Eagles' free agency, the Eagles released DeSean Jackson, Alshon Jeffrey, and Malik Jackson. All three had huge contracts, and we obviously know about the Carson Wentz trade. And for the signings and re-signings, we re-signed Brandon Graham to a contract extension throughout 2022. We signed safety Andrew Adams, and we re-signed Hassan Ridgeway. We also signed safety Anthony Harris from the Vikings and Joe Flacco as our backup quarterback. And we signed Eric Wilson, and we did sign Jordan Howard to be our second string running back. How do you think the Eagles did in free agency? Do you think they filled some of the necessary needs that moving into the 2022 season?
I think a lot of people were nervous that they weren't going to be able to make any moves. Like, we just weren't going to get anybody at all. And I think they did good considering the cap, and they had to rework some things prior to free agency, but they did, as they always do, as all teams do pretty much leading up to free agency period. I'm happy with the players that I'm happy with the players that we got, and you know, free agency is before the draft, so we don't know who we're going to get in the draft. But to me, the guys they've gotten in free agency leads me to think they have the right mindset going into the draft, if you know what I mean. Like, the guys we already filled some roles, which leads me into thinking they're going to go wide receiver or corner in the draft, essentially.
So what's their grade? What do you grade them?
Considering what they had to work with, I would probably give them a B, because we didn't go out and get any you know, fantastic superstar game changers, but we really didn't have the ability to. So I would give them a B.
Yeah, honestly, sure, B minus, B plus, whatever, in the B range. Not really mad about that Jordan Howard signing again. Mm-hmm. We need a secondary running back. I mean, minus like Boston Scott. Like, it's literally Miles Sanders and Boston Scott, which, don't get me wrong, I love Boston Scott to death, but he's not who we really need. And Corey Clement's always hurt, and he didn't even re-signed him. So having Jordan Howard, who a lot of people always sit there and like, oh, he's a veteran. I mean, yeah, technically he is because he's been in the league for a while. But dude's 26 years old. He's not old at all. He has years left on him. So for a lot of – he even came out and said, he's like, I thought my career was done because nobody came and talked to me until the Eagles called him up. I mean, he's 26 years old talking about thinking about retirement. Like, that's – unless you're like Calvin Johnson, who's perpetually injured all the time, which Jordan Howard, yeah, he's had his injuries throughout his career, but that's a power back right there who can suffice, and he's still young. He's not old, and he still has years left on him. So I like the Jordan Howard signing, so I give us a B, especially – I'll also like the linebacker too.
I'll take it a step further. I think we got an A-minus, not an A, not an A-plus. But we really – with the cap space we did, we started free agency with negative cap dollar. We worked our way up through re-signing players' contracts and just signing talented players that weren't going to be asking for a lot of money. But we addressed a lot of the holes that we needed to fix. We obviously got that power back. We saw success with that, obviously, in 2017 with LeGarrette Blount and Jay Jai. So that was good that we got a power back to go with Miles Sanders because, you know, he's just so elusive and he's the big play guy. But then you brought in a backup quarterback, which doesn't seem important for most teams, but for Philadelphia, it's always important. And then you addressed the linebacker position, obviously, like we just said with Eric Wilson. And you got a safety because, you know, Jalen Mills, he went to the Patriots. And even though he played corner a lot this year, he was primarily one of our safeties. So teaming him up with McLeod is important. So now we have two very good safeties. I know we didn't go after a veteran receiver like I wanted, but hopefully they take that in the draft. But we really addressed all of our immediate needs except for wide receiver.
I'll give you that. B plus.
B plus, A minus. That's what I had. But you
it was an 89.6.
We're all 89.3.
I'll give you that.
Fair enough. So they worked with the cap they had. And I really think Howie did a great job in this free agency class. We brought in no stars, but very good role players that should team up well with who we have currently. But moving on to the 76ers, over the last four games, the Sixers are 3-1 since the return of Joel Embiid. We had defeated the Celtics, Thunder, and Mavs while losing to the Pelicans. But like normal, Joel Embiid hadn't missed a beat. He's averaging 28 points in only 29 minutes per game over the last four games, which is incredible. And the man I give slander to the most, Furkan Korkmaz, he's averaging 15.5 points per game. But this team, they've just been playing phenomenal, whether it's with or without Joel Embiid. They have been phenomenal.
Yeah, they've honestly been playing really well, especially together. Also, fun fact, Dwight Howard still leads the league off the bench in rebounds with 396, which is kind of crazy, to be honest with you. But, I mean, he did start a couple games here and there. But as a bench player, he's averaging around 9-10 rebounds a game. So he's doing his job. He's doing Dwight Howard things out there. I mean, minus getting thrown out of games every now and then, a bunch of technicals. But Six has been playing really well. Your boy Korkmaz has showed up in that start he had.
Back-to-back 20-point games.
Bro, I'm telling you, man, you got to stop sleeping on him. I'm just saying. Like, you can hate him all you want, but he's finding his groove. Danny Green is playing pretty well, too. Matisse, he's just playing defense. I don't even saw he really does, to be honest with you.
He does his role.
He plays how he plays. I mean, at this point, if he develops an offensive game, which he kind of need to, if we're probably not going to keep Danny Green next year, I mean, he really needs to develop that as soon as possible because his offense game isn't really all there, and he's going to end up taking a backseat to Korkmaz. So, I mean, I have no issues with that. But I do like Matisse for his defensive prowess. Six has just been playing well. Tobias has had a couple off nights, but he's been playing still Tobias style. He still is averaging, 50% from the field this year?
Yeah.
So, I mean, Embiid. We're just going to keep it at that. I mean, there's no really more you can talk about that for him. But Ben, he gonna do what he do. I really don't know what either he does decent or he's garbage. But then when he's like not doing well offensively, he's still making up on the defensive end of the side too, stopping people. So I like I can be mad at him all I want for sucking on offense, but he makes up on it on the defensive end. So I'm not really that upset about it. So I don't, it's give or take for me.
I mean, Ben is just, he does everything else except for score great. I mean, he's still a 15 points per game scorer. So like, yeah. His impact is greater than just offense. And the offensive pieces that we have, especially with Shake Milton and Seth Curry, and I guess you could say Furkan and Danny Green now, I'm fine if he's a 12 to 15 points per game scorer. He may need to be more in the playoffs, but I mean, we brought in all these shooters for a reason. So you can't be mad if he's putting up 13 points a night.
Yeah.
The thing that has, for me, been the most enjoyable to see this year when watching the games is, you know, there may be games we don't have Joel. There may be games we missed, Seth Curry missed when he was going through the COVID stuff. Ben Simmons, same thing, missed some games. Tobias missed a couple games. So no matter who's out, somebody steps up. It doesn't even matter who it is, but somebody steps up. They're in every single game, no matter who's out. The one game they didn't have Embiid, they didn't have Ben, and I think they didn't have Seth. This was a little bit a while back, but still, you're missing, you know, three of your best players, and they still won the game. They're competing in every single game, and they're always in it. And like the other day, I think it was against the Pelicans, Curry played, and he had 0 points. They lost. But it's like some games guys are going to play better. Sometimes games, some games guys are going to play worse. But somebody seems like they're always going to step it up off the bench, whether if it is Korkmaz or Matisse, whoever. That's what I'm liking from the team this year is that, you know, in games where we may think, you know, that they don't have the best chance, there somebody usually is there to step it up and elevate their game.
Yeah, on that 10-game stretch where we didn't have Embiid, the Sixers still went 7-3. With exactly. Brett Brown last year, we would have went 3-7, the complete opposite. So players are stepping up. We just play as a team. Embiid obviously gets his shots up, and it seems like Tobias frequently takes the second most shots. But it's just so well distributed on offense and on defense. The team works so well together, and that's something we haven't seen in a while, in years, honestly. So I think that's why we're so good.
I agree.
And in the playoffs, it's going to be most important, right? Because every game in the playoffs is extremely important. And if there's just – there happens to be a game where Seth isn't shooting well or Danny isn't shooting well, we want to have confidence that somebody else is going to be able to step in there and contribute in that role. And everyone, I have confidence in this team.
Yeah, right? Everyone knows the roles. We have our shooters. We have our defenders. Embiid obviously does it all. But everyone just understands the role. I think you have to give credit to Doc Rivers for that because he's the one that makes the world go around for this team.
I agree. And also, like, even Paul Reed's gotten into a couple games recently, and he's done pretty well. I mean, I saw the other night, it was like 2 or 3 games ago, he blocked the hell out of a ball and sent that thing to the stands. And I was like, this guy's good. I mean, I would like to – he's not going to get minutes above Mike Scott just because Mike Scott's a veteran, which I know. It bothers the hell out of you, Sean. But the thing about Mike Scott is it's his presence out there. Because either Mike Scott's on fire or he's not. And when Mike Scott gets on fire, he's on fire and he doesn't miss, which is good. And I like Mike Scott because he actually plays defense too. He's not going to get you to blocks. He's not going to get you to steals, but he plays solid defense. So, and that's all he's ever been, especially later in his career. He just plays defense. So rotation-wise, come playoffs, we're obviously going to see a little bit more of Mike Scott, which I know you're not happy about. But, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, unless it's a blowout win against a team, then we're not going to see Paul Reed, really, or Maxey, or the rest of the guys.
I'd honestly say to keep the chemistry alive and keep the same rotation, I'd like to see Paul Reed. He's so talented, and he really can do it all. He's a 3-level scorer, and he's a great defender. But I wouldn't mess with the chemistry right now. You're right that Mike Scott does know his role. I don't think he's as talented as Paul Reed. I mean, he's like 35 years old, and Paul Reed's young, and he wants to go out there and hustle. But that's what Mike Scott does. Outside of shooting 3-point shots, he really is a hustle defender, and he's a decent defender. But I wouldn't mess with the rotation we have right now. It's just working so well. 2-3 weeks ago when we didn't have Embiid, I thought we should have brought him in 100%. But yeah, right now we're just on fire. We have a big game tomorrow night, but I wouldn't mess with the rotation we have because it's honestly working.
Yeah. I mean, against the Thunder, Mike Scott put up 13 points. So
he's a streaky scorer, but like
a very streaky. And that, but that's been his entire career. He's been a role player his entire career, and that's just who he is. And he knows his role. That's just what he is. I mean, like, let's be real. One of the best six men, two six men in the league, Jamal Crawford and Lou Williams, they know they're six men. They know they're not going to like really start all the time. So, like, they know their role. Just, I'm going to go in, do what I have to do, and get off the court. I mean, Jamal Crawford is different because he's good. He's just real good. And I wish we signed him when we went to the bubble. But whatever. It's besides the point. I like the chemistry we have going forward. And, you know, can't wait for the playoffs so we can beat the Nets 6-7. Matthew, no, forget it. I'm changing it. 6-5.
No, stop. You can't change it now. You can't change it now.
6-5, I'm calling it.
All right.
But look, don't forget, guys, the rotation is going to change because we traded for a guy, George Hill. So I don't think that Scott's going to see any playing time in the playoffs because you're going to have George Hill in as your backup point guard. You're going to have Furkan, you're going to have Shake, and you're going to have Matisse off the bench. And then Dwight. So you're already going to have those five extra guys off the bench. Normally, teams might not even run with that many. So between Howard's going to play the backup center, and then even Ben Simmons will see time probably with George Hill on the floor as the, you know, he'll be on the floor as the power forward, but whatever you want to call him. Yeah. So I don't think Scott's really going to get any minutes. If he gets minutes in the playoffs, that's kind of concerning to me. Like, I don't want him to see any minutes in the playoffs. I want our starters out there as long as possible. And if anything, I want Shake out there. I want Matisse out there for his defense, or I want Dwight out there to grab the boards.
I'm not even sure we'll see much of George Hill in the playoffs. I think it was a safety trade, but like
possibly
Ben Simmons is going to be getting 35 to 40 minutes a night in the playoffs. You have Shake and Furkan and Matisse and Dwight. So I don't know how much minutes George Hill will get. You have a pretty good bench right now.
It's not going to be a lot, but he will end up playing for his veteran status, for veteran playing, because that's an experienced playoff person there too, you have to remember. So
yeah,
he understands that, because remember, we're a young team still pretty much. I mean, minus like Tobias and Dwight and stuff. Playoff experience wise, George Hill on our team minus Dwight Howard has like the most. So, but understanding
Simmons has been a different player in the playoffs too. You got to remember that. I think so. You're right. They could have gotten Hill solely as a backup plan in case Ben reverts back to that, you know, that same style of play in the playoffs, and they can shut him down. If he's scoring under 10 points a game in the playoffs, you're going to see him move to the four probably, and George Hill, you know, getting more minutes at the point guard, because let's be honest, Maxey probably isn't going to see any time in the playoffs. Yeah. He didn't develop quickly enough to get any playoff playing time. What's up, Brian?
Maxey won't get any playoff burn.
Maxey won't get floor.
And regardless of Ben's offense, he's still going to be on the floor. Someone has to guard Kevin Durant. I think Matisse will be big in the Nets series. Yeah. And I think that's where you could see some George Hill. He's a pretty good 3-point shooter. And if Seth Curry is struggling on defense, guarding Harden or Kyrie Irving or Joe Harris, I think that's when you can bring in the experienced George Hill. He can help on the defensive side. I just, in the other series, I don't really see him getting many minutes. But with the experience he brings, he may get some playoff burn. I just don't think it'll be as much as we expected when we first made the trade.
Look, we just need the one seed so we don't have to play the Nets and Milwaukee. All right, that's just really it at this point, because I really don't feel like playing both of them. We can beat Milwaukee, but like back-to-back series, I got issues with that one, dude, to be honest with you.
You just said the Sixers and five, so the Nets shouldn't be much of an issue. They shouldn't be much of an issue at all. They're not that good. But moving on to Joel Embiid and his MVP chances. Right now, Nikola Jokic is number one, but Embiid has been so impressive over the past few games, obviously. And over the season, he's almost averaging 30 points a game. He's averaging 29.5, 11 boards, a block and a half, shooting 52 and 38.5 splits. Even though he has missed a lot of games thus far, does he have a chance at that MVP? because he's been one of the most dominant players in the league, if not the most dominant.
I want to say yes, as much as I really want to be on Embiid's side with this. No, not right, not now. I mean, he's missed too many games at this point. As his numbers say it all, he's dominant. He's honestly one of the most dominant people on the team and the most dominant in the league. But he's missed way too many games, 18 games he's missed at this point. Numbers are – his points are higher than Jokic. His rebounds are higher than Jokic. Jokic has 5 more assists than him per game average. But it's the games missed issue. And honestly, him being second is – honestly pretty crazy because he just came back and he obviously went back to being Joel. But I mean, I think Jokic has it in the bag unless something catastrophic happens to Jokic all of a sudden down the stretch. Then like, yeah, obviously Embiid's going to get it. But currently right now I have to go with Jokic having the MVP.
Yeah. I mean, I have to agree with you because of the games missed. A lot of the guys that we thought were going to win MVP have gotten injured one way or another and have missed at least, 10 games or more? So the only player that hasn't is Jokic. So it's kind of hard not to say Jokic. He's obviously the front runner right now, like you said. So I think it's kind of hard to go against Jokic because you just don't know what's going to happen in the last stretch of the season. And I would also love to say Embiid has a chance still, but I don't know if he's going to get the consideration. Now, he's still, even after the injury, when he's come back, he's been playing great. To me, the biggest roadblock isn't going to be Joel Embiid. It's going to be the Sixers. Are they going to rest him? How many more games is he going to miss? Are they not going to let him play back-to-backs? And just as frustrating as it is for the MVP, what's more important to me is us getting the number one overall seed, the number one seed in the East. Like you said, Reggie, it's very important that we get that number one seed. And if we miss the number one seed by a game or two, and Embiid misses 4 more games throughout the season that I think he should have played, I'm going to be pretty angry about that because that could have been the difference maker. And who's to say he's going to get hurt in this game or that game if he plays? I think it's just a joke. These guys get paid millions of dollars to play the game, and they rest them in so many unnecessary games, and it's extremely frustrating. He's healthy now, play him. Then he might have a chance. If he doesn't miss any more games, he might have a chance, but that's not going to happen.
I agreed.
He's missed a third of the games this year. Out of the 54 games the Sixers have played, he's missed 18, which is a lot. But I'll play devil's advocate here. Jokic and now the Jamal Murray injury, the Nuggets are probably going to drop.
Yep.
Usually MVPs, they're the one or two seed. Unless your name is Russell Westbrook and you're averaging a triple-double, even though he is this year again. 5 to 6 seeds usually don't win the MVP. So the good thing we have is that Embiid and the Sixers are obviously in the first seed. Embiid's carried our team, even though we played well without him. And the Jazz have no one that is deserving of it. The only concerning thing is Jokic. He's putting up monster numbers. I don't think his numbers will drop. I mean, he's averaging 26, 11, and almost 9, shooting 56 and 42 from the field. So he's been spectacular, but the Nuggets could realistically in the next 20 games, they could drop to the 6 to 7 seed. You know how competitive the West is.
Yeah.
And their guard play now is horrible. I think they have Monte Morris, who's a pretty good guard. But outside of that, I don't know who is going to play the guard. Michael Porter Jr. will obviously have to step up, as well as Aaron Gordon. But they could seriously drop, and that could affect Jokic's chances. Harden still is obviously in the mix, and it seems like LeBron's out. He's missed a lot of games as well. So, but I think he still has a chance, but he can't miss any more games. And I really do think that the Sixers will be sitting him, especially if we can secure that number one seed, or if we aren't the number one seed, but we secure the number two seed. I think he'll miss at least another few games.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like watching Jamal Murray tear his ACL last night, I was watching that game. That was honestly it's just sad because Jamal Murray, he hasn't played fantastic, like absolutely amazing this year, but he's done pretty well. And having him out there on the floor, Jokic honestly helped Jokic get his assist numbers up because that's honestly where a lot of them came from, were him. But I see a dip in the Nuggets happening just because their guard play is straight garbage. Like, it's unfortunate. Like, the Nuggets aren't a terrible team, but that guard play is pretty trash. And honestly, the Jazz also, there's nobody on that team who deserves to get an award. But we'll see what how it votes out. I mean, I want Embiid to get it. It'd be awesome.
I think Reggie was lagging out, but it's going to be an interesting race. It's just so crazy because all of the top MVP candidates, most of them were injured outside of Jokic. The thing Jokic does have going for him is he's missed zero games.
Exactly.
Which is phenomenal.
I was just looking at it now to see, because I know the Nets already played their game today. Harden did not play. He's still out. So, yep. I mean, who knows how many more games he'll miss, because he, in my opinion, was going to win it before the injury.
Yeah.
So if he comes back soon, maybe he'll still have a chance. Because I think that was the first time he missed games this year, was this injury. I don't think he really missed, except for the beginning before the trade, and he missed a couple. But other than that, I think I don't think he missed many games. So we'll see when he actually comes back. I think he's just kind of day-to-day right now.
Hey, Reggie.
What up?
Good to have you back. Wrapping up the MVP discussion, we'll move on to Ben Simmons. He's made a lot of comments to the media in the last few days. But regarding the Nets and the Lakers and who we should focus more on in the playoffs, Simmons quoted, "We're going for the past champs, the Lakers. They were the ones who won a championship, so you have to give them respect. Obviously, Brooklyn has a lot of talent, but at the end of the day, there's only one ball and you have to play defense too." What do you guys think about these comments? Do you guys think he's out of line or is he justified?
He's not wrong. And he had to answer the question. I mean, he didn't bring it up himself. He was asked the question. He kind of was led into having to give an answer. And, you know, I'll tell you what, he wasn't going to say, you know, "I don't think we have a shot." Of course, he was going to say something like that. So it doesn't, I mean, of course, it's funny, you know, but it doesn't shock me. I think it was kind of it's what I want to hear out of one of our star players. I want to hear and feel the confidence when he says it. And I think he showed that.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. I mean, there was nothing he said that was wrong in my mind. I mean, a lot of people give him crap because he doesn't score all the time or he doesn't put up like those amazing numbers. But I mean, look, he plays better defense than pretty much anybody, and actually better defense than anybody in the league in my mind.
Yep.
It's like, and we still have a guy who's in the running technically still for defensive player in a year, who's our bench player in Matisse. So, I mean, between those two, having them on our team, Ben's not lying. The Nets have one ball and you have to give that to KD, Harden, and Kyrie. And honestly, that's one ball for three ball hogs. Let's be real. I mean, Durant's going to get his. Durant will always get his. There's really no stopping him. He's honestly he's the purest scorer in the game right now. There's no questioning that. Kyrie is Kyrie. I mean, he's either on fire or he sucks. And then Harden, he's Harden. I mean, it is what it is. He's just going to step back and shoot every time because that's just his game. But, I mean, he's not wrong. And the Sixers' defense is still one of the tops in the league. So, I mean, the Nets notoriously don't play defense. They don't have a good defensive team. They stack their team with former All-Stars, former all teams and everything. And none of them really play defense. LaMarcus Aldridge sucks at defense. Who's going to cover Embiid when we play them, if we play them? Who's covering him? I mean, they lost the other night. So, I mean, it's going to be a battle, but I'm going to say it right now, Sixers and five,
it changed. I'll agree that Ben's right, but he better be ready for the challenge because I think the Lakers have a legitimate chance now that the Nuggets are out, and I don't think the Lakers or the Clippers are scared of the Suns. It's going to be one of those two teams, but we're going to have to play the Nets to make it to the finals. And Ben Simmons will be guarding one of the best scorers in the game, Kevin Durant. So he has a real challenge ahead of him. And now that Kevin Durant and James Harden and all these guys have heard him say that, they're probably going to attack him. He is the best defensive player in the league. I agree with that. So he just has to be ready for the challenge. But, I mean, I wouldn't say the comments were out of line. The Nets are ranked 24th in total defense, which is pretty bad. But, again, Harden, Durant, and Irving have played less than 10 games together. And while they're not great defenders, any of the three, they're decent defenders. At least they try, maybe outside of Kyrie. Harden's changed over the past few years. But I hope he's ready for the challenge, because those are three of the toughest players in the NBA to guard.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Sixers and the Nets have not played a game against each other this season when everybody's healthy. When Harden, KD, and Kyrie are all in, and then Ben and Joel and Tobias are all in.
You are
correct. What's one thing this year that we've been saying that we really liked seeing is that Ben and Joel have played well on the court together. What's one thing we haven't seen the Nets do? Play well all together at one time. We've seen Harden go off when KD's out. We've seen KD go off now while Harden's out. We've seen Kyrie sprinkle in some good games here and there. But just wait till the playoffs when they have to finally come together and figure it out when the games really matter. That's something that I think a lot of people are overlooking. You know, a lot of times when teams acquire somebody at the trade deadline, that player doesn't make a major impact right away. It takes time to get used to the culture of the organization, to get build chemistry with the team. They might be there together at the games and stuff, but they haven't played a lot together, the three of them. And I think that's going to be a big component in the playoffs, that they haven't had that experience as a trio together on the court. They're going to have to figure it out as they go. And I think that's going to cause some struggle for them, especially in the
really
beginning
a trio
of the
any, it's not a trio anymore. They had Blake Griffin and Aldridge. So their starting five is insane. And then they still have DeAndre Jordan. And I know his minutes are slipping because of Nicholas Claxton. But it's just weird for them because, you know, they started out with two All-Stars, Kyrie and Durant. And right as they're getting their chemistry together, they get Durant. And then a month and a half passes by, you get Blake Griffin. And then now you have LaMarcus Aldridge. So they should have chemistry issues, but they're just so talented that I don't think they'll have a huge issue.
I agree. I mean, the Nets are a very talented team. They have great players. But, like, let's be real, Blake Griffin's on the decline. Like, he had one or two good games with them, and he's been averaging, like, 8-9 points a game. Like, come on. And then LaMarcus Aldridge, he's going to get his – I've always liked LaMarcus Aldridge, but, I mean, let's be real with him, too. He's not who LaMarcus Aldridge used to be. He's still not a great defender.
Yeah, but I'll say that it's fine if they're 10-point scorers. I mean, if you have your big three in Harden, Kyrie, and Durant, that's around 80 points a game. And then Joe Harris, he's been amazing this season. He's putting up around 15 points a game. So 10 points out of those two veterans is nice. If they can get 15 to 20 point games for them, that's scary. So, and then you still have DeAndre Jordan off the bench. So, yes. I mean, as long as they have that big three, they're going to score points.
Yeah, but they still have to play together. Let's be real.
Yeah. Well, they need to build that before the playoffs. I think that's really important for when Harden can come back. I know he's been dealing with some injuries.
And it's a big if at this point. I mean, if they can actually play together, because, I mean, let's be real. Remember the last time the Nets got a big three?
Yeah, it was Paul Pierce and Garnett and Williams, Deron Williams.
Yeah. Because Deron Williams had like two amazing years out in Utah, and they signed him, and then he went garbage. And then KG was old, and Paul Pierce was doing Paul Pierce things like he always does. So,
well, that's a big difference, though, when you have a 35-year-old Paul Pierce and 35-year-old Garnett versus having a 28-year-old Kyrie Irving and a 30-year-old Durant and Harden. So, I mean,
yeah, I mean, but I mean,
32, yeah.
They still got to play together. I mean, we really haven't seen them play together, and they're not. Honestly, I'm going to make a prediction right now. Sixers win tomorrow 120 to 118.
Yeah, well, moving on to that, the Sixers and the Nets play tomorrow in Philadelphia at the Wachovia Center. Obviously, both teams are 34.
Wachovia Center? The Wells Fargo?
Did I say Wachovia? Wells Fargo. Oh, wow.
Hey, bro, just call the First Union. Call First Union at this point, man. You already went far enough back, bro.
Well, the Wells Fargo Center, not the Wachovia Center, but both teams are tied in first with 34 and 17 records. And it looks like the Sixers should be fully healthy. Embiid said it's going to be like a playoff game, so he's going to be playing and putting in full effort. But it looks like the Nets will be shorthanded. They will have Kevin Durant, but Kyrie Irving and James Harden and LaMarcus Aldridge are not expected to play. Kyrie Irving, for like the fifth time this season, is taking off because of personal reasons. And James Harden obviously is dealing with issues and injuries, as well as LaMarcus Aldridge. So this shouldn't be a relatively tough game for us, even if they have Kevin Durant. It's one of their big three.
I will never say because Kevin Durant. I'll never say that. Kevin Durant's cold. That man's cold. He's going to get his. I think he's going to at least put up 30. I think so. He can do it because he can shoot over anybody on our team, including Embiid.
He'll get his, but will it be enough? Yeah, exactly. Ben will probably be on KD.
Yeah.
Harden's I hope out. So.
Yeah. Well, that's
so what's Ben going to do. That's, you know, after what he said, hopefully we see Ben step up and be a little more aggressive. I think he also said another comment about, you know, sometimes the confidence kind of slips and he needs to work on being more consistent with it. So let's see it. Let's see it now. Let's see it before the playoffs. I would like to see it a little bit more consistently. It's we did see it pretty consistently for like a 2-week stretch. And then, you know, after the All-Star break, that kind of disappeared. So I'm curious, was he playing extra hard to get that All-Star nod and now he's kind of just cruising? Or, you know, do we have to question his work ethic? I don't think so, but I mean, that's kind of what it seemed like to me at the time. I'm hoping that we start to see him pick it up a little bit.
You would expect his confidence to be sky high after hitting two jump shots against the Thunder. I mean, that's when I'd think he would be most confident, because he never makes those shots. He never takes those shots. So I'm surprised that didn't spark his confidence and lead to a big offensive performance in the following game. But it is a big game for him tomorrow after what he said to the media in regards of the Nets not being able to share the ball. I know it's only one of them at this point tomorrow when we play, but I don't think the Nets can really stop Joel Embiid. Whether LaMarcus Aldridge is playing or not, you can't stop him. And Nicholas Claxton, he's a good defender, but I just don't know how the Nets will stop him. And I think for it to really be a game and for it to be a series in the playoffs, they're going to need their two stars to go along with Kevin Durant to make it close. But tomorrow night, I don't think it will be a blowout, but we should definitely win.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, 120 to 118. I'm sticking with it.
That's a close game. I'll go.
Who knows? Because honestly, Blake Griffin could pull an old school. I don't know. It's Blake Griffin. Who really knows about him? Sometimes he's weird. Now having LaMarcus Aldridge out and Kyrie, I knew Kyrie was going to be out. And I knew James Harden was going to be out, but having LaMarcus Aldridge out of the game too was kind of a big step up. But I mean, KD can honestly carry it with he's going to get his no matter what. I just know it's just who he's always been. I mean, I've seen him pull some ridiculous shots out of him for no reason when he was on the Thunder. So I mean, it is what it is with KD. He can drop at least 50 if he wanted to. And that doesn't even faze him one bit. So we just kind of have to stop everybody else, really. I mean, you can hope to contain Kevin Durant. He's the purest scorer in the league, but when healthy. But, I mean, we'll see how it goes. I mean, I think Sixers are going to win tomorrow. I would never call it an easy game. Any game we play from here on out is never an easy game for us. In my mind, we got to play to keep that number one seed. Whole time.
Yeah, you can't really stop Durant. I mean, he shot the other night 5 for 5 off the bench and scored 17 points. And even in their loss the other day, he put up 22 points in 24 minutes. So there's no stopping him. But I think this game is big for Ben Simmons, Defensive Player of the Year standings. It seems like it's getting increasingly closer between him and Gobert. Simmons went back to second in the race. But if he can hold him to a 15-point performance off Durant's pretty efficient, so I don't know how inefficient you can hold him. But I think it could be a big game for him, especially if you shut him down, because even though Durant's only played 21 games this season, no one shuts him down. And this is a prime game for Ben Simmons to go up against Durant, and I think that will be the main focus of the game, as well as Embiid hopefully dominating.
I will say this right now. If Durant scores under 25 points when guarded and Ben is guarding him the entire game, they're out there at the same time. Ben only has him the entire time. Ben needs to jump up to number one, the Defensive Player of the Year.
I mean, it shouldn't be Gobert in the first place. So,
well, we know that. That's just facts. I mean, Ben's a bum scorer and put 42 on him. So,
exactly.
Facts. That's what you said. Were you about to give a score prediction, Sean? What's your Reggie gave his. What's yours?
Yeah. What's yours, Sean? Yeah,
I'll go 109 or 119 to 112.
I'll say 108-100 Sixers.
Well, at least we're all in the hundreds because
it's a low-scoring game. But I mean, I guess they're missing two of their best scores. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens with the Sixers and Nets. But moving on to the Phillies, this Sunday there was obviously controversy in the Phillies 7-6 win over the Braves. In the ninth inning, Bohm got into a play at the plate at home, and they called him safe. And they even looked back at the replay, and they still said it was safe. It was such a close call, but a lot of people have been online and on social media saying it was so clear that he was out. What do you guys think of the call?
Eric, you take this one first.
I mean, he was ruled safe. When I personally saw it, I thought he didn't touch the plate. But we know the people that see the replay in New York or wherever the heck they're watching it from, they get the best angles. And if after watching it, they said it was safe, then I guess safe. But from what I saw, it didn't look like he touched the plate. But as Bohm said, I was ruled safe. That's all that matters. So that's all that matters. You know, that we got lucky. We got on the lucky side of that call there.
Yeah, what I'll say is he definitely wasn't safe. You can see his foot, it kind of slides over the bag. And it was just so weird. But, I mean, what you could say is that the catcher was blocking the plate partially. No. He wasn't standing. It was just his knee. I know. He wasn't safe. I mean, it's not really controversial anymore.
My guy was out. But the issue is with the whole thing is they came back and said it was inconclusive, mm-hmm. which – it stands with the call that was made on the field. But, I mean, let's be real. Unless, like, you have, like, a microscope and can look and see, like, if the, like, his cleat, like, skimmed the plate, which it didn't. But, yeah. I mean, like, maybe the ump saw it that way. I don't know. Dude was out. And there's no doubt about it, he was out. I don't know why. I mean, I give props for him running on that play because that ball was real shallow. There's only, like, four people on our team who I would ever send in that situation. Obviously, Roman Quinn. I would send Didi.
Yep.
Definitely. Bryce, 100%, and Kutch. Those three guys, I would own. Those are the only four people on our team. Actually, you know what? Five, JT. I would send JT on that. Because JT can run. JT can run for a catcher. Dude stole third.
Yeah, he can.
He already stole third this year. What catcher steals third? He already beat out two infield singles this year, too. So those five people, I'm not sending Alec Bohm. I don't care how lanky he is. I don't care. Uh-huh. He should never, ever do that again. Just like Rhys Hoskins. I'm not sending him either. He's slow. They're both slow. But and Gene Segura, I don't – maybe.
No.
I don't know.
He's slow.
But, yeah, he's slow. He's slow for a middle fielder. But still, he was out by – not, I will never say by a mile, but it was pretty clear he was out. His foot really didn't touch it. Now, my big issue is the Braves fans are just sore losers at this point, man.
Yeah.
Through debris on
if that happened to us, that happened to the Phillies the other way around, you know Phillies fans would be fuming about that. Like, they'd still be talking about it.
Dude, we're throwing beer at the umps, not debris. We're not that lame. But, I mean, he was out. We've gotten more egregious calls going against us, too. So, I mean, it is what it is at this point. He was safe, just like Bohm said. I was called safe, so I'm safe. So, it is what it is. Matt said, what do you think of Anderson's performance against the Mets? He didn't pitch bad at all. I'm not upset with that at all. I mean, it's the Mets. The Mets have a very good lineup. There's there's really no holes in that entire lineup. I mean, he gave up the two-run shot to open it, and then it went to the most stupidest of extra innings rule of all time. But, I mean, like, he didn't do bad. Like, I'm not mad about his performance. He could have done better, but he's our fifth starter. Like, we brought him in as a veteran presence as our fifth starter, and he did really well in spring training to make it on the team. So, I mean, we'll see how it goes moving forward. But, I mean, I'm happy about it. I'm not upset about it. I'm not like thrilled about it, but he did well enough.
Yeah, but that's the thing. He gave up the 2-run home run to open the game, and that's all the runs he gave up. He only threw 74 pitches, and they took him out. You're playing a doubleheader. Why are you taking your starter out after only 74 pitches? I get it. It's still early in the season, but we used a lot of pitchers in that first game.
We really did. And having Archie Bradley go to the IL really hurts us too.
That's probably why we brought up JoJo.
That's actually the only reason why we brought up
JoJo. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Chase settled in. And to wrap up the whole Bohm thing at home, there is an unwritten rule in baseball that tie goes to the runner. So it was a bang-bang play. I don't know how the umpires could miss it going back to the replay. I'm not sure how they missed that.
According to the replay booth in New York, that is it.
They won.
Don't care.
If he was ruled out and then they went and looked at it, they wouldn't have overturned it. You need to, you're looking at something on replay, it has to be conclusive that it was the other way to change it. Now, we can say that, and you know, in our opinion, it was, but when a replay is done, the more likely scenario is always going to be that the call is going to stand. It has to be like super clear, which of course we're all in agreement that it was, but most likely in a replay scenario, it's going to stay.
They probably had that thing zoomed in on the plate in like 4K and like saw something we didn't see. Like, honestly, from we all watched the same replay. We've all seen like the same four angles of that, his slide in. He did not touch that plate in our minds, right?
But not a chance. Right.
There was no chance because Darno pretty much like caught it and slid in front and like got in his way, which technically it could have gone either way. It could have been like he blocked the plate, but at the same time, he really didn't like block the plate. The ball took him out of the line and he moved back to make the tag, which isn't illegal. If he was sitting right there, then like it's a clear save and call it a day. But he didn't really touch the plate unless he slid like. Like I said, that was zoomed in on like 4K, man, because there's no way we saw him slide over that and he was safe. Like, I don't believe he was safe, and I still called it today he wasn't safe. But, hey, safe's a safe. Game win. I could care less, man. Win's
a win. Regardless, we won, and that was the scoring run. So
exactly.
I think us Phillies fans will take it. But the Phillies lost today in game one of their doubleheader, like we had just said, 3-4. Hector Neris blew the save in obviously the seventh inning shortened doubleheader game. But Didi Gregorius, Andrew Knapp, and Gene Segura had RBIs. And like we just said, Chase Anderson started out on the mound. He recovered quite well, but it was good to see JoJo Romero out there today. He only pitched one inning, like most of our bullpen does in these shortened games or shortened starts for the pitchers. But he allowed no hits, only on one walk and no runs. So, outside of Hector Neris, I think we played quite well.
Yeah. I mean, Connor Brogdon, he did really well. He's still I kind of wish he got the win. You know, there have been four wins for a reliever, and he would have – I'm pretty sure it's like a record. That's some record at this point. I mean
– at the point in the season like, we're in, yeah.
We're 10 games in, and he had four wins. It's nuts, and he hasn't given up a run this entire year. He still has I think he's at 15.1 innings, scoreless innings dating back to last season too. So I mean, dude's a stud. I like him. I mean, yeah, he gets into trouble obviously because he's young, but I mean he's a stud dude, and I'm happy to see JoJo back up. I was kind of upset we let him down, but I mean we put him in the minors. But I mean, having players like Kinsler, who's a veteran type guy, and Archie Bradley, who honestly, Archie Bradley. He's always been the way he always had been. Like, he's not a big strikeout guy. He's going to get you out on ground balls. He's going to get you out on pop flies. If he strikes you out, well, he struck you out. That's all it is to it. But I mean, I do like Archie Bradley in that role. He's also a very good veteran presence. Hector Neris, he's just Hector Neris. I mean, he got real pinched on some calls earlier in the game. I mean, not early in the game.
That umpire today was awful, man. There were pitches at the bottom of the zone above the knee, completely above the knee, called a ball. Completely on the outside of the batter's box, called a strike. I mean, his zone was all over. It was consistent, but it was awful. And that pitcher for the Mets, his last name, I can't remember, number 50. I think it was – I don't remember his name, but he had some nasty stuff, man. He had a sinker and changeup with the exact same motion, and the difference in speed was over 10 miles an hour. And then he was throwing a 100-mile-an-hour fastball on the opposite side of the plate. That was my first time seeing him in action, and he really impressed me today. He had some good stuff, but he was taking advantage of that outside part of the plate to left-handed batters with his sinker and changeup all day, and the umpire was calling it. But he was a little inconsistent towards the end when Neris was throwing his sinker on the outside. So, you know, they had some, the umpire was not very good today, but, you know, it ended up going into extra innings and they ended up losing the game, even though they still only played 8 innings. You know, this new dumb rule where you play only 7 innings. What are we back in Little League now? We're only playing 7-inning games. I mean, it's just ridiculous, but
I mean, Hector Neris.
Yeah, the Mets are down 3-0, or Mets are up 3-0 right now.
Yeah. Adam Haseley should have caught a ball that went to center, and then Brandon Nimmo came up and hit a single to score 2. But I mean, as far as our bullpen, I'm not really upset with our bullpen today. I mean, minus Neris, but I mean, the stupidest rule of all time. Yeah, let's put a guy at second. Stupid. Just put him at first. Put him at first. Why not?
Look, I don't like the 7-inning doubleheader thing, but the extra inning rule, I hated it at first. I like it now because of a few things. One, the biggest thing, it gives baseball in extra innings a sudden death feel. Instead of it just being extra innings as normal until somebody scores, there's some type of sudden death atmosphere to the game. If you have a runner at second base and nobody out and you can't get that runner home, you deserve to lose the game. That's my first point on it. Second point is if the runner on second scores, the earned run, the pitcher doesn't get charged with an earned run. And I think that's only fair, because if that wasn't the case, I think it'd be a little unfair to the pitcher who comes in with a runner on second, nobody out. The third thing that at first when the rule came out, I was concerned about is who's going to be that runner on second base? Is somebody's at bat going to be skipped because they're just automatically going to go to second base? Or is it going to be the last out? And since it is the batter who made the last out, I like that as well. I think that was the right call. Except so because of all those things, I like it. It gives it some type of sudden death feel. Like, you know, we talked about this earlier, you know, in hockey, there, you know, when you score, you win. In football, if you go up and score a touchdown, you win. So it has to have some type of sudden death feel, and baseball didn't have that. And I like that. I like that change.
Yeah, unless you're a diehard baseball fan, you don't want to watch a 15-inning game with that.
Well, I played baseball, and I'm a pretty diehard baseball fan. I just think that at first I didn't like it because I'm like, why are they changing the game? But I thought about it, and this year is when I changed my mind on it because we have the full season now. And because it's a long season and these games, man, like it helps because when, like I said, it's just a simple fact. Like if you can't score in that scenario, you just deserve to lose the game. Like at that point, it brings it's like a whole new strategy to extra innings. And I don't know. I kind of like it because in extra innings, what tends to happen is everyone tries to hit a home run and nobody tries to just get base hits, and it drags on and on and on. Now, when you have the runner at second base, you create a little bit of a strategy where, hey, maybe we bunt them over. Maybe we just try to hit some grounders and get them over. You have a different approach to extra innings. Yeah.
I see what you're saying. I really see what you're saying. But why not? Like, I miss the days of watching, like, just games just going on. Like, I just really enjoyed that because, like, I've honestly played in a handful of those games before. And it's just fun. Like, and that was fun to me. Like, honestly, watching your second baseman throw an inning is just funny to me. Like, I don't care. That's just fun. Watching freaking Vince Velasquez play left field because we ran out of people and everything. Like, I miss that type of thing. If we're going to do it how it is with the extra innings, put the runner at first in my mind. Put the
runner at first would actually be smart, too. But I think baseball just wants to shorten these games. Like I just said earlier, unless you're a diehard baseball fan, no casual fan's going to be watching for another 2 hours. So I think it's to just keep the fan interest at the highest peak it could be. But for diehard fans, maybe it's not the same interest with the extra innings rules.
Yo, Eric, hold on, Sean. You want to tell the people about that stat we talked about earlier with that softball pitcher just for fun?
Oh yeah. So there was college softball pitcher today. This was super impressive. We were talking about this before the show. She threw, and they play 7 innings as well. Uh-huh. And she threw 7 innings, gave up no hits, no runs, no walks, a perfect game. She struck out all 21 batters. So she struck out every single batter of the game. I have her name right here just because since we're talking about it. Her name was Hope Troutwin. And yeah, she threw a perfect game and struck out every single batter she faced. Her defense didn't have to do a thing.
I thought that ever happened cool. before? Not in softball and baseball. There's no way.
It's come close. It's like I think the highest I was like 18, I think, I want to say. Let me see.
But nowhere close to 27 batters. That would
that's like impossible.
No, I know. That's why I asked.
That's like the true perfect game. You know, like, I know. That's like as perfect as you can get, except for not throwing a single ball or something. Like that's as close as you can get to being truly perfect.
And that was collegiate, right?
Yeah, that was. Yeah, I believe so.
Still, yeah, damn impressive.
That was crazy. But that's a great way to end the show this week. Thank you all for joining us tonight on the NSN Philly show. If you haven't already, please follow Notoriety Sports Network. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Twitch, TikTok, just about everything at Notoriety Sports on all platforms. Stay in tune with us for all breaking news, all sports, and also all of our other live shows as well. We all hit different sports, different topics. So check us out, hit that follow and like button if you haven't already. And hopefully you'll see us next. You'll come back and watch us again next week. We'll be live again next Tuesday at 8:30 again for you. Hope you have a great night, everybody. And thanks again for watching.
Peace out.
See ya.